Morning. Have you ever sat at a dinner or talking with somebody, having a pleasant conversation, and then you notice they got something stuck in their teeth? Maybe some broccoli or something like that, and you feel that you have to focus on that and talk to them about it until you can't focus on anything else until you talk to them about it. Or maybe you're the one that has the broccoli stuck in your teeth, and it's a bit funny and a bit odd, but you have someone that says to you, you got something stuck in your teeth. You say, okay, thank you for letting me know. And you attempt to fix the problem. And you do the famous, is it gone? And they say, no, you got a little bit still. And you kind of fix it. And then you move on. But what if the person who's telling you is someone that you know will constantly chew with their mouth open? And you kind of want to reply back to them snidely, well, I wish you don't close your mouth while you're eating. It's a little different scenario, but a similar thought that Jesus is talking about here. It's a challenge. It's a line that Jesus draws in the sand. If we, his church, are going to reach people, be effective, and minister to people in this world, if we are going to have any hope of fixing the problems that we have, we need to be working on fixing our own problems as well. What hinders the work of the church that the church is commissioned to do more than anything else is that we have broccoli in our teeth. Or as Jesus put it differently, we're trying to remove a speck in our eye, or in someone else's eye, trying to help, but we have a plank, a log, a branch in our own eye. And we'll get to that here shortly, but this text is one that you need to look at as a whole, I think. If you don't, you kind of miss things. It's a text on self-examination. At first glance, it may appear as disjointed proverbs. Jesus is just kind of slinging together these different tidbits of wisdom, but they're connected. He's not just rambling on. He had more focus and purpose than that. The topic of the Sermon on the Mount and the topic of the day that he's dealing with is life in the kingdom. That this is how my people are to be, are to do. Here's what my people should live like. And it's kind of this idea of don't force the kingdom on people. It's a thing of they have to accept it themselves. It's a blessing, and to receive that blessing, it has to be you searching for it, not something forced upon you. The Father wants us to ask. He wants us to seek him. He wants us to knock on heaven's door, and he'll let us in. But a person's heart needs to be ready. So there are two taxidermists. They were stopped by this window where there was this owl in the window on display, and immediately they started criticizing the way it was mounted, that its eyes were not natural, its wings were not proportionate to its head, the feet were not put together just well, and the feathers needed to be arranged a little bit better. When they had finished criticizing their thoughts about the owl turned his head and blinked at them. Someone once said, the art of being wise is knowing what to overlook, knowing what not to go after. We call it picking your battles quite often today, too. And that fits our teaching. That judgmental attitude, the criticism that we talk about, what we're talking about today, says a lot more about the person who's criticizing than the one that you're critiquing or judging. So we get to verse 1. Judge not that you be not judged, for in the same way that you judge, pronounce judgment, and with the measure you use, you will be measured to you. There's this odd thought of be generous in your judgments of others, your criticisms of others, because you're going to be measured by the same standard that you hold everyone else to. And I want to bring in the Message paraphrase because it captures this principle in a different way, kind of sheds a little bit of light, I think, that actually is pretty good to hear. It says, don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, let me wash your face, when your own face is distorted by contempt? It's this whole traveling roadshow mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou instead of just living your part. Wipe that ugly sneer off your face, and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. So, The type of judging that Jesus is talking about here is that condemning judgment of you're no good. We're never going to be able to fix anything. It's censoring. It's fault finding. It's criticism to others with no comparison to self-criticism or self-correction, saying that I mess up too. It's all about you're the person who's the problem, not me. No comparison to our faults and our mess-ups. This is called the law of equal weight. The same measure that we use to judge others is going to be used on us as well. And what's even scarier is it's God who's going to be dealing out this judgment of you were not just whenever you dealt with these people. Now you see my justice of your injustice happening. So you see a whole lot of we better be loving, we better be compassionate in how we help people because it's going to be dealt back to us. This is probably one of the most quoted Bible verses today. It's the probably the only verse that the lost person can quote. And almost every time a person is criticized, they revert back to this verse. And I think that we go to that verse for wrong reasons. It's that we say, don't judge me. We try to say it because we want to control the situation. If we say, don't judge me, we kind of put them on their heels. We want to condemn. How dare you judge me? Whenever we say stuff like that, whenever we kind of quote that verse, don't judge me. And we also kind of clear our names because we are changing the subject of, it's not about what you're coming to me with, it's about you judging me. That's the problem here now. Jesus points to, this is deadly. The criticizer is deadly because of the destruction that they leave in their wake. Whenever we say something of somebody's judging me, we hurt people. We misrepresent God's bride, the church, and we misrepresent God. So serious is this criticism and judgmentalism within the church that Jesus doesn't pull any punches. The same way that we're judged, we judging other people, we will be judged as well. There's a danger whenever we are critical of people, whenever we allow ourselves to have that seat of, I can criticize other people. Judging them not by what we do, but by what we think is ideal versus what God thinks is ideal. And the church can also suffer from that, a spirit of criticism. But we're not supposed to be doing that. We're supposed to restore people, not criticize. We're supposed to be compassionate. We need to pull people up instead of tear them down. The saying is, don't judge me. People make it so often. Don't judge my lifestyle. I think more of what Jesus is getting at is we need to be generous in our judging of people so that our measurement is not too strict that even we can't stand up to it. We need to be as generous in our judgments as God is in his forgiveness, really. And this is the best way I can think of to illustrate this. I heard this story. Who does Monkey Girl marry? Alligator Man. And you think, that's a weird thought, but okay, true. So we see Monkey Girl has this beautiful silky hair all over her body. And Alligator Man has scales on his skin. But they got together, they hit it off really well. In fact, they got married. Apparently Monkey Girl's parents had some questions, thinking that she was marrying beneath herself. But they got married anyway. And then the real question hits. I wonder what Monkey Girl and Alligator Man say to each other when they're having a knockdown, drag-out sort of fight with each other. An Alligator Man looks at her and says, I can't believe I married a freak like you, only to catch his own reflection in the mirror. And the point is this. We all have our own flaws, our own shortcomings, and maybe we've forgotten about them. Maybe we were kind of sidetracked, but they're still there. And I think that Jesus is trying to bring that to our remembrance, that we calm our ideals whenever we're willing to look in the mirror, whenever we have that hard look at ourselves. The best way to get rid of that judgmental attitude is to look at yourself, look at your flaws, look at where you came from, look at the mess-ups that you've had. And when I see the parts of my life that are out of place a little bit more, it helps me to be a little bit more generous to other people in how I deal with them, with their faults. Once I deal with my stuff, I can be a little bit more charitable towards yours. And what we begin to see is our faults that God forgave us help us to see and put in perspective all the things that other people are doing to us. But like so many, when we see the tiniest flaw, we tend to make it into a mountain. And we criticize even the smallest things. We're producing massive problems for ourselves. We get to verses 3 through 5. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye? Don't you see the log that's in your own? And this is kind of a humorous section. You can almost just picture it, because this is why it's humorous. Just imagine someone trying to get something out of your eye while they're bumping you in the nose with a plank that's sticking out of theirs. You can almost see the humor in how ridiculous that is. You won't take them seriously. You ever get someone or get something stuck in your eye, you know that whenever something's in your eye, you need to get it out because it's going to be such an irritant. You can't focus on anything else. And Jesus is saying, you do that with your physical life. You don't allow things to be in your eye because it bugs you. Why do you do that with your problems? Why do you allow your problems to stay in your life the way you do, acting as if they're not there, not dealing with them? The speck in the eye can be serious. It blinds us from seeing and being able to actually help people. If we are Christians trying to help others, but we have not dealt with our problems, we're the ones with the stick in our eye trying to help other people. And this is where it's kind of a call to self-examination. Where am I at in my life? What have I not been willing to deal with that'll help make me more effective when I do deal with it? I think there's a serious problem present here of not knowing we have things in our own eyes, our own life, that we refuse to even see as a problem. Meaning a lot of problems that we don't let Jesus deal with and help to get rid of in our life. The stick in the eye hits us right where we are, I think. We tend to try to get that tiny speck out of someone else's eye while ignoring the huge log or stick or branch in our own eye. There's a part of it that we feel better about. If I can deal with someone else's problems where I'm doing a little bit better than they are, I feel very good. I'm able to swoop in and try to help, right? The only things I'm going to help with are the ones that I'm far superior than you are with them. But if there's some things that you're outdoing me with, well, we'll change the subject. How about that? We don't like to admit it, but we need to admit it. We need to admit our problems in order to deal with them. And then we get to this weird verse that Dennis didn't want to read for some reason, so we are going to go through that actually. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample you underfoot and turn and attack you. This is a very odd verse, but it actually connects the judging with the ask, seek, and knock that follow. It means don't give your valuables to something that doesn't see the value in it. Don't give your wisdom to those who really don't care at all. Sometimes our truth, no matter how good it is of God's word that we bring, no matter how much we do, it will not be accepted. And kind of the point is, we shouldn't be surprised that some people are not ready to hear it. Ask God instead, and He will give. This is kind of the pray to God that people are more accepting. Pray to God that He will open doors. And I think part of Jesus' point is, don't force it. Don't waste your precious time. You have only a limited amount of time on this earth. Don't waste it trying to force somebody who does not want anything to do with what you are talking to them about. Move on to someone who's more receptive, who's wanting to hear about these things. A person's heart needs to be ready before they're willing to accept God. It's by asking people to receive the grace of God, not by coercion, really. Your pearls are precious. Don't just throw them around to anyone. Wait for the person who's wanting to hear. If somebody says seems to not want to hear, don't take the time to try and force them to do it. They don't want it. They see that they're not edible. You think about it in the analogy. They don't want it. They don't think they're not edible. They don't understand their value or their meaning. The pearls may even make them angry because this isn't what I expected whenever you said you were going to give me a pearl of wisdom, right? And then we get to verse 7. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and to the one who seeks finds. And the one who knocks, it will be opened. Or which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Verses 7 through 11, it tells us something of who our Father is. Verses 7 through 8, we see that our Father is wanting to give. He loves to give. He loves to reveal what's hidden to us. And He loves to open doors for us. If you could get close enough to the White House to knock on the door, chances are you still would not get in. You might be lucky enough to just be able to look through the bars to be able to see it. Yet, if we knock on God's door, the door opens. Why? Because our Father wants to be around us. He wants to know us. He wants us to seek Him out often. He enjoys being with His kids. We generally apply this to prayer, and rightly so, but I wonder if maybe we should apply this also to people entering the kingdom of heaven as well. We can't force them to enter, but through prayer, we can ask God to help move them closer to seeking these things out, to move them to a point where they are closer to asking, seeking, and knocking in order to find God, right? 9 through 11 kind of gives us a further illustration of what the Father's heart is like, that we can trust Him to give good gifts. We trust our fathers who are sinful to give good gifts. Why not our perfect Father? And then we get to verse 12. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do to them also, for this is the law and the prophets. It's often called the golden rule. These words were taught by Jesus are often misunderstood. Many people think that if I do this, if I live by the golden rule, that's enough to save me. But this is a part of being a kingdom person, a citizen. This doesn't have to do with salvation. So what is the golden rule about? The entire Sermon on the Mount is the characteristics of a citizen of the kingdom of God. And the teaching that Jesus brings forth is not really a new thought, but only He flips it around. The teachings before were taught in the don't do to others what you don't want done to you. Jesus flips that around and says, do unto others what you want them to do to you. He kind of turns that around to the positive. Here's a true story that happened in April 26, 2008. Softball playoff game. Washington Central and Western Oregon faced off. Winner went to go to the playoffs, I mean. And Sarah Tusky, one of the Western Oregon players, came to the plate. There were two runners on base. It was a 0-0 ball game. Sarah hit, for the first time in her career, a home run right over the fence. However, when she was rounding the bases, she missed first base. All right, and she turned around to go and touch first base. When she did so, though, she went down. She had torn her ACL. Sarah's first base coach wanted to go out and to help her up, but to do so would rule her as being out. As a rule, you can't touch one of your teammates when they're rounding the base, or else they're automatically out. So Sarah lay on the ground, and the umpires talked to determine what should be done. They talked about, okay, well, you guys can have a pinch runner substitute to be put in, which would effectively have canceled her home run into being just a single. So what are they going to do about Sarah's home run? They don't want to lose it. As the coach is trying to make preparations for a substitute, she hears a voice that says, excuse me, would it be okay if we carried her around and she touched the bags? You see, in softball, it's against the rules for your teammates to touch you while you're rounding the base, but it's not against the rules for your opponents to. There's no rules against your opponents being able to. So Mallory Holtman and Liz Wallace offered to carry her around the base. They did so. They carried her around. She touched all the bases. They handed her off to her teammates. Wasn't that a great softball game to experience of somebody living by the golden rule? When asked later why she did it, Mallory Holt said, honestly, it's one of those things that if it was happening to me, I wish someone would do exactly what I had done to her. You want people to do it for you. In other words, she was living by the golden rule. Following the golden rule, the generosity of God can become our generosity. We can learn to imitate what God has done. We accept that God was generous to me, so when He could have been judgmental, He didn't. So I can do the same to others now because I've seen it happen. When we start to see that God is able to give good gifts, we we see that we're able to do the same thing. It empowers us to do the same thing, to be like Him. Let's change the way we look at people. We all have brokenness in us, right? And we can sit around and we can talk about all the mistakes that we've made, but we also bear the image of God. And we can talk about bringing that out of one another, making the best of one another, challenging each other to be the best we can. Sometimes we fail to recognize that those that are in the water cannot help themselves. They need us to show them what the rescued life is like. Something is a trap, and so we need to spend a little bit of time of companionship so we can convince them to get in the boat. Others may think that the boat is an illusion and they don't want to be taken for a ride. And still others, a little bit arrogant, say, "No thanks, I'd rather drown." But God's values and cares so deeply for them that we should care about them too. We need to do the same. No one wants to live the dog life that we talked about in verse 6 of don't give your pearls to dogs, or right? No one wants to live the dog life anymore, and that means that we've begun to seek out God for ourselves. And maybe today you find yourself at the door. You're behind the door. You're not sure what's there. Maybe there's something like a snake, something poisonous, something bad for you. Or maybe you're afraid that you'll be disappointed of, oh, this is just a rock, and I thought there was going to be something great behind this door. The dog life ends when we trust that God is good, that He is able to give good gifts, and to knock on the door and to seek entrance into His way, His kingdom. I want to be free from the chains that have held me back, maybe you're saying, that have held us away from God and what He has in mind. You don't have to live that old life. God offers a new one. And maybe you've already done that, but you still have plenty of changes that need to be made. I recommend the same path. Seek God. Ask God to help you. Seek out God. Go and knock on the door of heaven asking God to help you, to come in and to know you and to know Him. Spend time with Him. Just being with Him, as we see with the life of the apostles, that just being with God, being with Jesus, changed who they were. The option is here for us today. The option is here to give our life to God, to live for Him. Maybe we've made that decision already. Maybe we need to renew it. If you have any of these needs, you can tell me during this next song as we stand and sing.